Jack Silver. Jack had a tin ear for comedy, as evidenced by the fact that in our first year on the air, we had several comedians come through, and Jack told us there were three he didn't want back on: Joel McHale, Zach Galifianakis, and Louis C.K. Until Louis' Me Too moment, could you imagine a more revered group of comedians? But to Jack, they were persona non grata. You know what he did want? More cooch talk. That's not hyperbole. That's a quote. I remember because he said it at a staff meeting after the show that led my news girl at the time, Teresa Strasser, to be so aghast that I suggested she was taking a rape shower in her mind. And it was immortalized by a Rich Banks song. We all know that when Louis is not doing stand-up, he's sitting down on the edge of a bed with someone watching him whack off. While he hasn't fully gotten back into the good graces of the comedy community, some people are willing to give him another shot. And after a Me Too forced sabbatical, Louis's back on the scene. Here's where my diabolical prank kicks in. When Louis does a theater show, he's up on stage, which puts his crotch about 6 feet above the audience. Someone should buy 10 front row center seats at his next gig and give them out to friends and family. The condition is they each have to wear a hazmat suit, one of those yellow, full-bodied suits like Bryan Cranston wore when he was cooking meth in Breaking Bad, right down to the respirator and goggles. Treat it like a Gallagher concert. As a comedian, Louis would appreciate the joke, and as a perv, he'd probably love the humiliation. One more quick but important Louis C.K. story. Like many victimizers, he was once a victim himself. This was years ago, and this is the first time this has ever come out in print. I wish I'd spoken up sooner, but I finally mustered the courage to speak. Years ago, I was an eyewitness to Louis being sexually assaulted, and I did nothing. One of the writers on The Man Show and Cranky Anchors, comedian Jordan Rubin, would have midnight roller disco parties back when people were single and still had the will to live. He'd invite lots of different comedians he was friendly with. One evening, we were discoing the night away at the roller rink. Louis C.K. had a sweat going, the kind of sweat that says, "I'm a guy who dances once every 7 years at a wedding." We were in the locker room afterward, and Louis had his shirt off and was toweling down. From nowhere, my buddy Ray came up behind him, cupped his man tits, and jiggled them furiously. Louis was carrying a little extra weight at the time and was probably a B cup. To this day, Ray will defend himself by saying he thought it was Roastmaster General Jeffrey Ross, as if that somehow makes it better. The point is that after the world's worst reenactment of the Janet Jackson Rolling Stone cover shoot, Louis was very upset. For a guy who likes to whack off in the presence of strangers, he was very uptight. Which is it, Louis? Do you have delicate sensibilities, or do you let your freak flag fly while you polish your flagpole in front of female underlings? Matt Lauer. Unlike Louis C.K., who will be able to make a comeback eventually, Matt Lauer won't. Not because what he did was worse, or because the evidence against it was any less, he said, she said, but because he has no discernible talent to rely on. If you could do something, you could get back to doing it, but he does nothing. You couldn't shit-can Seth MacFarlane, Mike Judge, Howard Stern, or anyone who brings something to the table. Matt is useless. Like Billy Bush, who I mentioned earlier in the Trump chapter, Matt Lauer's nothing but a handsome teleprompter. Look how quickly they replaced him. They just went for girl power and gave Hoda Kotb an extra glass of wine and an extra hour of time. When I heard that Matt's wife righteously left him and took half of his $100 million net worth, I was furious. What the fuck had Matt Lauer ever done to deserve that kind of money? I'm sure there's any number of decently attractive local news guys who have the entire portfolio of Matt's skills. Reading the news, not putting on weight, nodding and looking concerned when you're supposed to, and getting up at 5:30 a.m. We need a celebrity drop-off day, like those events where you go to a high school parking lot and drop off paint cans and cleaning products and car batteries. there are a lot of people we're just done with, like Dennis Rodman. He's not getting rebounds or banging Carmen Electra anymore. We're kind of done with him. So let's recycle him. Back to Matt Lauer. Another case of incredible hypocrisy. NBC was so concerned with the victims of sexual abuse that they felt compelled to release a tape of Trump on the Access Hollywood bus. Certainly it had nothing to do with politics, right? But when Ronan Farrow came to NBC with an ironclad story about Harvey Weinstein, they suddenly lost interest in survivors of sexual trauma. Why? Harvey had the goods on Matt, their morning show golden boy. They said their journalistic standard hadn't been met, that there wasn't enough evidence to run the Harvey story, and killed it. Yet they felt it was okay to run a tape of a presidential candidate from 10 years earlier, recorded without his knowledge? Spare me the lecture on your journalistic ethics, NBC. A quick couple of thoughts on the father of the Me Too movement, Ronan Farrow. Is he a eunuch? Those of you who know how poorly I spell can only imagine how many attempts it took me to get that word right. My spell check just kept coming back with the word tilt. My computer started smoking, and the lights in my house dimmed. Seriously, is he built like a Ken doll? He must be clean as a whistle on his sexual history to ironically have the balls to get all these women to talk to him about their sexual encounters. Of course, there's the controversy over the sexual history that led to his birth. He's supposedly the offspring of Mia Farrow and Woody Allen, but it's often speculated by anyone with two eyes that he's really the son of Old Blue Eyes, Frank Sinatra. It's not even that he looks like Frank, which he does. It's that he looks nothing like Woody Allen. You'd think a couple of recessive genes would make it into the mix, but apparently not. When Billy Joel's genes got together with Christie Brinkley's, they created a daughter who looked like both of them. When you breed a 10 and a 2, you end up with a 6, like when a poodle and a Labrador get together. The result is a Labradoodle. In Ronan Farrow's case, it would be like a poodle and a black lab getting together, and the puppy comes out a blonde lab. Just to close it out, which of Ronan's probable dads do you think is least proud of his work calling out guys with sketchy sexual pasts? Les Moonves. Again, I'm not surprised that a guy with the testosterone to drive him to the top of a major media corporation also wants to be on top of some of the women in that corporation. My real ire is about his wife, Julie Chen, who left the talk after all the allegations against her man came out. What happened to the open, honest dialogue she'd been having with the other Yentas on the show? She even left the show via pre-taped message, saying she was going to spend more time with less. She's the female Matt Lauer. On a program that promotes itself as keeping it real, she was a real zero. No opinions, no comedic chops. She was right down the middle. She should totally give Les a pass because he gave her a career. What are the chances that someone who had her personality surgically removed at birth would end up hosting not one, but two network shows? Think about it. Has anyone ever uttered the phrase, "Hey, did you hear what Julie Chen said the other day?" But seriously, fuck Les Moonves. He didn't pick up my sitcom pilot for CBS in 2009 because I was told he liked blondes. Jenna Elfman had a pilot the same season, and he decided with his boner instead of his funny bone. I'm glad he got denied his $120 million golden parachute, like I got denied my pilot pickup. Jared Fogel. This one isn't so much a Me Too situation, but since we're covering guys who actually deserve to lose their careers, I thought I'd throw him in. He's a real creep. And he's going to be away for a long, long time. He's definitely going to put back on all the weight he lost eating Subway sandwiches. They'll be taking him out of prison on a refrigerator dolly. I do have a couple of ideas for him post-incarceration that would definitely make the news. If I were the CEO of Quiznos, I'd be locking down Jared as my spokesman right now. You can't buy that publicity. There's precedent from when the Verizon Can You Hear Me Now guy went to Sprint. Think of the balls it would take to hire Jared. It'd be like the, with a name like Smuckers, it's gotta be good campaign. I'd stand at the front of the boardroom and say, hear me out. This move says, we're so confident in our subs, we can have a convicted pedophile as our spokesman. We'll get more eyeballs than Ford, Coca-Cola, and Apple, and never spend a nickel on marketing. It'll just be a picture of Jared holding one of our toasted subs with this line. Quiznos. Yeah, we're that good. Bill Cosby. Over the past few years, we've all seen a parade of women coming forward about getting drugged and raped by Bill Cosby. At a certain point, it would have been easier just to ask the female population of the United States between 29 and 64 who hasn't been roofied by the cause. I loved how, in the wake of all these accusations, his honorary doctorates were taken away. There you go. That'll solve the problem. The fake degree we gave you to come and do our commencement speech is hereby revoked. Why not take away something that stings? The certificates are still in the trunk of his fucking car. I'm sure the honorary doctorate from Rutgers means as much to him as the certificate I have from finishing the pig's trough at Farrell's. Google it. As I write this, he's in year one of a 3 to 10 year sentence for aggravated indecent assault and is trying to appeal. Has anyone fallen from grace further than Bill Cosby? Some falls might have been faster, but this was America's dad, the voice of Jell-O and New Coke. The only question remaining is, does he kill himself in prison or does he die of, wait for it, natural causes? Get it? Causes. Like Bill. Yeah. Okay. Good stuff, Ace Man. Seriously, if he was Japanese, he would have killed himself by now. Guys like this have such a high narcissism level that they see themselves as too good to die. Depressed 16-year-old boys kill themselves when their girlfriends break up with them. Harvey Weinstein, O.J. Simpson, Bill Clinton, and Bill Cosby are fine with themselves. Bill Cosby was narcissistic enough to sue his accusers. He made himself the victim. People like him don't look in the mirror and see monsters. Killing themselves would be denying the world of their greatness. I'll never be able to understand that mindset. What I really want to get to the bottom of is the women who stand by their men, or at least stand behind them, tight-lipped and dead-eyed during their men's apologetic press conferences. I hope after Bill dies in prison, I can convince Camille Cosby to come with me. She'll still have some of his money left, and she'll defend every bad decision I ever make. She obviously knew about his transgressions and turned a blind eye. Seriously, if I were doing the deposition of Camille Cosby, my first question would have nothing to do with what she knew about his crimes. It'd be whether she has a younger sister with the same live and let fuck attitude. I would then invite Camille to a dinner party with Lynette, Melania Trump, and Anthony Weiner's wife, Huma Abedin. Eventually, Lynette will start complaining about me and say, the other day he came home and he didn't even say hi to the kids. He just went straight to the den. They'd each chime in. Mine fucked a porn star at a golf tournament and then paid the National Enquirer to shut her up. Mine sent a dick pic under the name Carlos Danger, taken while our infant son was in bed with him. Mine drugged and raped Playmates of the Year from 1972 to 2004, a quarter of the WNBA. Oh, and don't finish that drink. Anyway, what were you saying about Adam being a little moody? Since the times we find ourselves in demand that people declare themselves a victim, I have a suggestion for all the above perpetrators. Rather than going into hiding, push back and claim that you're a survivor of a disorder that affects over 3 billion men worldwide, RCS, better known to the medical community as restless cock syndrome. We can stop RCS in our lifetime. I'm wearing my white ribbon right now. The collateral damage. Al Franken. I'm not defending Al because I like his politics or his comedy. I'm defending him because if there was a Mount Rushmore of guys who got fucked over the rush to more judgment in the Me Too movement, he'd be George Washington, thus making him our first Jewish president. We've all seen the picture of him on the USO plane with Leanne Tweeden, his hands hovering over her flak jacket-covered chest while she's sleeping. It was clearly a joke. The stuff about his writing a scene specifically so she'd be forced to kiss him was debunked. But who cares? Those are just facts. Trust me, you should never fall asleep in front of comedians. They're going to do some horrible shit to you. My guest booker and road manager, Mike August, fell asleep during football watching on Sunday, and Cousin Sal from Jimmy Kimmel Live did a Yokozuna on him, jumping and landing with his bare ass on Mike's face. Mike reacted in the last second, ended up trying to block it, and chipped his tooth on his Rolex. And if you ever fall asleep in front of Jimmy Kimmel, you're definitely going to get a penis on your forehead. Hopefully, it'll just be drawn in a Sharpie. Al's plight did give me a great idea for a TV show. Bus Bench with Al Franken. Each week, Al would sit on a bus bench, like Forrest Gump, and a different celebrity who's been canceled would sidle up next to him, and they would talk about what they each did to lose their celebrity status. The premiere episode would have R. Kelly. Kelly would start, "I essentially kidnapped, brainwashed, and ritualistically raped a Girl Scout troop. It was pretty much my own personal sex cult. You?" Robert Kraft. "Far be it from me as a Rams fan to want to help out anyone associated with the Patriots franchise, but this is another case of we've got to make an example bullshit. Yes, we've got to put an end to this scourge, nay, epidemic, of rich old widowers getting hand jobs at Florida strip mall massage parlors." But because Robert Kraft was going to make the news, the police had to have a press conference, threatened to release the video evidence, and throw the book at the guy. I'm sure there are a couple thousand dudes in Florida who did the same thing, but ironically, got off clean, because like their balls post-massage, they were empty bags. Just because Kraft owns the Patriots and probably pays $15 million a year in taxes doesn't mean you get to make an example out of him. Just give him the same fine the other dude from Orlando who just spooged in the next room. Police made a big deal out of having video evidence, which was bad news for Kraft's defense. When every article of clothing you wear is monogrammed, you're going to be easily identified on a surveillance tape. It would have been great if they had sat him down, showed him the tape, and then brought Bill Belichick in to break down the game film and critique his handjob receiving skills. Speaking of hands, how quickly do the hands shoot up at the station house when the sergeant is looking for guys to go undercover to install cameras and pretend to be businessmen getting happy endings at a rub-and-tug joint? I'm pretty sure there's a lot more volunteers for that duty than kicking down doors in the warehouse district to bust a drug ring. Not a tough call to choose between an MS-13 kid unloading a clip on you and a 90-pound Asian broad unloading your clip for you. Hey, gun guys, fuck you, I don't care. Clip, magazine, whatever the fuck, shut up. It's called artistic license. I'm not justifying it, but as far as the accusations that Kraft was participating in, or at least benefiting from, sex slavery, there's a hell of a lot worse options as far as slavery goes. I'm not a historian, but when I think about the Jews in Egypt or Africans in the South, I imagine any one of them would rather give Kraft a handy than be sweating in the fields getting whipped picking cotton or in a pit making bricks from mud and straw. Before we move on, let's talk about the rub and tug. First off, no one could ever give as good a hand job as you can give yourself, so this act has no appeal to me. More important, I would prefer a tug and rub rather than a rub and tug. If you do the tugging first, then I can enjoy the rub during my refractory period. If I get the massage first, I'm going to be anxious about when the tugging is going to start. Another quick Robert Kraft story related to our commander-in-chief. I was backstage at the finale of The Celebrity Apprentice in the little green room area they had created out of draped black duvetine. To all the aspiring female black rappers or ebony porn stars reading this, duvetine would make a great name. You're welcome. I was hanging out with the male celebrities having some drinks and snacks when Trump walked in and said, "Guys, I'm going to go get Bob Kraft and introduce him to you." You could tell he was proud, like he was going to blow our minds. But he didn't know the crew he was pitching this experience to. It was Paul Sr. from Orange County Choppers. He's a biker, so he's not into team sports. Dee Snider from Twisted Sister. He's a rock and roll guy, so he's not into sports in general. Penn Jillette, the magic nerd. Plus Clay Aiken and George Takei. Need I say more? What are the chances that six men are offered the chance to meet the rich owner of what will likely go down as the greatest franchise in NFL history, and none of them know who the fuck he is? I was the only one in the room who wasn't assuming Trump's friend Bob Kraft was the heir to the macaroni and cheese fortune. Peter Farrelly. I hope you're sitting down. The director of Something About Mary, Dumb and Dumber, and Kingpin goofed around on the set. Take a minute to catch your breath if you need to. In the run-up to winning the Oscar for The Green Book, he had to apologize for something he had done a decade before. Apparently, he liked to pull down his pants and expose himself to actors to make them laugh. You know who thought it was funny? Cameron Diaz. It's all about context. This is friends fucking around on a movie set. Growing up, every guy I knew would pull a nut out of their fly and let it dangle until their friend noticed. God forbid you left your camera out at a party. You'd have the film developed. There'd be a picture of the graduating girl in her cap and gown, a custom cake done up like a soccer field, and your buddy Craig's cock and balls.
Does that happen anymore?
No.
That used to be the greatest thing in the world.
Oh, my God. If you hung around with Ray and Chris, that's all they fucking did.
That's it.
And when you look good naked, you do it a lot more. Ray and Chris looked good naked, and they were naked. They were hairless, and they looked good, and they were naked all the time. That's how it worked. Matt Damon. This is particularly stupid because Matt Damon didn't do anything. He simply pointed out that Al Franken didn't do anything. But in the Me Too witch hunt, pointing out context, gradations of offenses, and proportionate outrage apparently makes you a witch too. There was far more indignation about Matt Damon's pointing out that there's a difference between Al Franken and Harvey Weinstein than there was about the officer who stood outside of Stoneman Douglas High School while 17 kids got gunned down. Poor Matt Damon. He took so much shit, he can't even get booked on Kimmel. James Franco. I'm not even really sure what he did other than be young and hot in Hollywood and mow his way through starlets. He won a Golden Globe for The Disaster Artist and was likely to get an Oscar nod. But then he put on a Me Too lapel pin and made himself a target. He was trying to show his support, but that only made the mob go after him. On this one, I say, good douche. You got what's coming to you. The part where he's a human and had transgressions, I'm okay with. That's up to him and the people he wronged to sort out. The part where he had to climb to the top of Mount Pius and declare himself a hero, only to get outed as a poonhound, is just good goddamn karma. William Shatner. Who would have thought that Captain Kirk would turn into Captain Creep? Mr. Spock would find his sexual harassment highly illogical. I bet half of you right now are thinking, I didn't even hear about that one. But you believed it for a second. That's the problem with this movement. For a split second, I made you think Shatner committed some offense beyond his hairpiece when he hasn't. But in this fucked up time, rumor weighs as much as fact. And once someone gets that scarlet hashtag, it's hard to shake. There were plenty of guys who did nothing wrong, like my friends Chris Hardwick and Neil deGrasse Tyson. Two of the nicest, nerdiest guys on the planet who wouldn't hurt a fly, never mind a girl or an intern, who got caught up in the accusation equals guilt thresher and forever will be a footnote in the history, or shall I say, hysteria of the Me Too moment. Charlie Rose and Garrison Keillor. In case you were wondering, I didn't forget about them. I'm not sure the details of what Charlie Rose did or if Garrison Keillor did anything at all. What I do know is that if Charlie Rose, the PBS host, and Garrison Keillor, the soft-spoken voice from Lake Wobegon, can get Me Too'd, then it's possible for any of us. There's no more, that guy would never. Think about it. They faced the same ire and scrutiny that Donald Trump and Harvey Weinstein did. That is a full range of male sexuality. Every one of us males falls somewhere between those two goalposts. Richard Ned LeBeau. Don't know that name, do you? By the end of this section, you'll understand why you should. He was a professor of political theory at King's College London. Here's another name you don't know. Simona Cheroni, a professor of women's gender studies at Merrimack College in Massachusetts. The long story short, they're at a convention of scholars who study international affairs. Among many others, they were jammed in an elevator. I'm sure at this point you're thinking that he grabbed her tit, squeezed her ass cheek, or rubbed himself up against her. If only. Everyone was yelling out their floor. And the 76-year-old LeBeau made the dumb old fifth floor women's lingerie joke. Well, apparently this bitch professor, Cheroni, did not hear a tired joke from a Bugs Bunny cartoon. She heard a vicious attack and demanded an apology. God damn, this woman, she should be the poster child for every fucking thing that's fucked up in this fucked up society. And you pussies who listen to her, you're as bad. It's like she's the Nazi and you're the fucking townspeople who said, oh yeah, Anne Frank, she's over there. Go get her. Jesus Christ, have we fucking lost it? Have we lost it? I'm just looking at Dawson, like shaking my head. Like, this is insane. Look, I don't get, look, she's nuts. Fine. He's a victim. Fine. Why aren't we speaking up? We just go along with this? Because we're scared we're going to get wished out into the corn fucking field? Jesus, it's sad. It's like pathetic, sad, and scary all at the same time. I'm going to fucking move to Devil's Island in French Guiana and start my own fucking colony. Anyway, where was I? She filed a formal complaint with the International Studies Association, ISA. I know, my dad was one of the founding members. After Professor LeBeau's first round of reaching out to her to humbly explain the joke was rejected and the ISA required him to cease contact with her, he wrote the following to her.
Like you, I am strongly opposed to the exploitation, coercion, or humiliation of women. As such evils continue, it seems to me to make sense to direct our attention to real offenses, not those that are imagined or marginal. By making a complaint to ISA that I consider frivolous, and I expect will be judged this way by the Ethics Committee, you may be directing time and effort away from the real offenses that trouble us both.
Nice job, Dawson. You can pick up your union card on the way out. That is the most fucking sensible letter I've ever heard in my adult fucking life. There's not an infinite amount of time and resources to investigate everything and focus on it, find the real problems and focus on that shit. There's some math that's going on in our society that's right there with, you know, no child left behind, fucking nonsense. Something's going on and it's not right. She took offense that he called her frivolous offense frivolous, and the ISA told him to formally apologize. This hero refused. He must have read the preface of this book 2 years before it was written. I'm sure there are many who are reading this and thinking he should have just capitulated and moved on. But he is right. Giving in would only encourage more of this overreactive bullshit, which prevents action on real problems. This would be like a new police chief saying he's going to be tough on crime and clean up the city. And his first act is hitting jaywalkers with pepper spray while the Latin Kings are filling the streets with fentanyl. When you become a professor of women's and gender studies, don't you just become like a pig finding truffles, tuning your sniffer to hunt down every potential offense towards women? Of course, Professor Sharoni found something to complain about. She tipped her hand in her original complaint when she wrote, "As a survivor of sexual harassment in the academy, I'm quite shaken by this incident." To make things worse, she highlighted that the people on the elevator were all middle-aged white men, except for myself and another woman. Why the need to include his race or the race of other people in the elevator who laughed if you're not looking to make yourself into a victim of the current boogeyman for all of society's ills, the middle-aged white guy? If everyone in the elevator laughed except you, maybe you're the fucking problem. Do us all a favor. Take the elevator to the top of the roof and jump off. One last quick idea. I think I'm going to do a spin-off with Professor LeBeau, much like my bus bench with Al Franken. I'll put him in an elevator with a special celebrity guest to discuss their elevator behavior and consequences. That guest, Ray Rice. Google it. Ironically, our next and final entrant is not white, but did fall victim to someone seeking to be a victim. Aziz Ansari. Like many, I'm not sure what he did other than go on a bad date. All I know is that he shouldn't have apologized. He should have held a press conference, come out and said, "I'm Aziz and I ain't sorry," before dropping the mic and walking off. This is the problem. The rules of the game have changed. We're all capable of offending in the current culture. I would hate to be dating now. I'd be horrible at online dating. I'd start looking at someone to have a date with, jump over to YouJizz, deplete myself, and then the girl I was chatting with on the dating site would be like, "You want to go to California Pizza Kitchen?" "Nah, I'm good. I'm just going to watch SportsCenter." Actually, I'd probably have the girl describe herself, punch that into the search on Pornhub, and just take care of myself. I can't type worth a shit either. I'd need some sort of Cybero de Bergerac to make sure I didn't screw up my profile. Otherwise, I'd be one wrong keystroke away from writing all about the millions I spend on collecting vintage rape cars. All the dating app stuff has ruined the cute stories we heard about our parents and grandparents courting each other. It used to be, I had a friend who needed to set up his girlfriend's friend so he could go on a double date. So he asked me and I didn't want to go, but I owed him a favor. At first, it didn't go well. Your mother didn't think I was interested because it was a setup, but I knew that there was something special about her, so I was persistent. I kept asking for a date with just the two of us until she finally gave in and I won her over. I put that florist kid through college, sending your mother a bouquet a day until she agreed. My grandkids are going to ask their parents how they met, and the answer will simply be, "Dad swiped right." And that persistence would be called stalking today. I'd never send a dick pic. It seems like standard protocol nowadays to send a snapshot of your dong to the gal you're courting. Imagine if this was always the case. If part of dating was snapping a Polaroid of your pecker, stuffing it into an envelope, and mailing it to your potential gal pal. I'll never understand this. I guess that says something about my cock. I don't feel the need to show it off. It's not big. There's no novelty to it. It doesn't have a dog leg or a sand trap. It doesn't have an interesting birthmark the shape of Idaho. It's not like some dicks that are veiny, you know, the ones that look like Wolverine's neck. It's just a standard issue white guy dick. There's no need for a picture of my dick. You want to know what my dick looks like? Next time you're making s'mores, stack up 3 marshmallows. No need to take a picture of my dick. It'd be like if you and your buddy were walking down the street and he stopped and said, "Hold up, look at that. Is that a Camry? Dude, what is that, 05, 06? Beige with a cloth interior? Get a picture!" If my dick were a character from a sitcom, it would be Potsy from Happy Days. Google it. Nothing to write home about or spin off into its own series. Statutory Rock. Another victim of the Me Too movement is Frank Loesser, songwriter of Baby It's Cold Outside. There was a lot of hubbub about this Christmas tune in 2018, with some radio stations refusing to play it. While the line, "Say, what's in this drink?" does evoke Cosby-esque imagery, it's hardly the rapiest tune out there that's still on the airwaves. Hear Casey Kasem in your head as we count down the top 10 statutory rock tunes of all time. Coming in at number 10 is a hot track from Neil Diamond, which is a given to make our Too Young to Consent countdown. "Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon." Girl, you'll be a woman soon. Please come take my hand. Girl, you'll be a woman soon. Soon, you'll need a man. Incidentally, there's a deeper cut by Neil Diamond with a line that pegs the creepo meter. September morn. "Look at what you've done. Why, you've become a grown-up girl. I still can hear you crying in a corner of your room." That doesn't even rhyme, does it? It's just creepy for the sake of being creepy. "Why is she crying, Neil? What did you do?" Coming in at number 9, which is half the age these girls should be, is Christine, 16, by Kiss. I don't usually say things like this to girls your age, but when I saw you coming out of school that day, I knew I've got to have you. Disgusting, but still Shakespeare compared to the lyrics of Lick It Up. Coming in at number 8 on the countdown is Sammy Johns' 1973 Ode to Mobile Rape Wagons, Chevy Van. Her young face was like that of an angel. Her long legs were tanned and brown. Yes, Sammy picks up a young hitchhiker who is like a princess, makes love to her in his Chevy van, then puts her out in a small town in her bare feet and never passes through again. Yes, Sammy, you were truly Prince Charming to that princess. Number 7 on our countdown, "Waste No Time Letting You Know a Crime Is About to Be Committed." Here are the opening lyrics from Benny Mardones's number 11 Hot 100 hit in 1980, Into the Night. "She's just 16 years old. Leave her alone," they say. If by they, he meant her parents, the police, her high school guidance counselor, and society in general, then yes, they say leave her alone. Since this was Benny's only hit, it makes me wonder whether when he's playing the county fair circuit and has to close with this tune, he changes the lyrics. "She's well over 18 years old." Or maybe he's modified it based on each state's age of consent. When he's playing the Alabama State Fair, he wouldn't need to change a thing. Number 6 on the countdown has the word child right in the title. From 1978, Nick Gilder's Hot Child in the City. "So young to be loose and on her own. Young boys, they all want to take her home." I don't know which city this is. I hope they have a good Megan's Law sex offender registry map if I do move there. Starting out the top half of our rape rock wrap-up is a perennial all-star with multiple entries. Number 5 is Gary Puckett and the Union Gap's Lady Willpower. Starting as a typical 1968 love song, and later gives us a window into the object of Gary's desire with this set of lyrics. Did no one ever tell you the facts of life? There's so much you have to learn. Just in case that didn't let you know, the lyricists like them barely pubescent. Number 4 on our list is also by Gary Puckett and lays it out in the title of the song, Young Girl. It's hard to pick just which lyric is the creepiest. Look them up yourself and decide. But I'm going with, beneath your perfume and makeup, you're just a baby in disguise. While a lot of songs use the word baby figuratively, this one uses it literally. Number 3 on our countdown tells the story of how a man everyone called Yellow finally finds his courage after his love Becky is raped. From 1979, Coward of the County, sung by the late great Kenny Rogers. One day while he was working, the Gatlin boys came calling. They took turns at Becky, and there was 3 of them. Nothing like a little gang rape in the middle of your creepy country song. Fun fact, they were named the Gatlin Boys in that song because the songwriter allegedly had a grudge against country stars, the Gatlin Brothers, of which there were actually 3. On to number 2 on our countdown. While the 1970s were a heyday for retro rock, 1988 brought us Winger's 17. She's only 17. Daddy says she's too young, but she's old enough for me. You won't find that song on the best of Winger because there is no best of Winger. And claiming the number 1 spot on the chart with their 3rd and strongest entry, Gary Puckett and the Union Gap from 1969 with This Girl Is a Woman Now. She cried a single tear, a teardrop that was sweet and warm. A child had died. A woman had been born.
He was crying.
And he's rejoicing.
I know. While in the lyrics of Young Girl, the songwriter tells her to get out of my mind because their love is way out of line. The protagonist of This Girl Is a Woman Now clearly followed through on his temptations. Google the song, take a listen to it, then take a shower and come back to finish this chapter. Trigger warning. If you find yourself on the following list, prepare to be triggered. Somewhere in 2017, it hit me that Natalie Portman would be disgusted to have sex with me. From there, it grew to a top 30 list that my podcast fans nominate and rank annually of female celebrities who would not only find my body, but my soul disgusting. I'm sure none of them will read this chapter, but if they do, they'll only be more horrified if somehow we end up having sex. Again, to be clear, while there may be some crossover, this isn't a list of notable women I want to have sex with. My non-existent self-esteem wouldn't let me make such a list. A blue ribbon panel I commissioned has combined the rankings from 2017, 18, and 19, eliminated the inside jokes and family members that fans have put on the list to fuck with me, and created a definitive all-star Hall of Fame list of women who would never stop vomiting if they had sex with me. This is the one that started it all. She played Jackie Kennedy, but she'd be more traumatized than the actual Jackie Kennedy if she had to hump me. She'd pour Dior perfume into her eyes. Ladies and gentlemen, Natalie Portman. Next, I called her a crazy coos and told her to go back to South Africa for her comments about America being racist. For her, a little afternoon delight with me would be the equivalent to the post-apocalyptic hell of Mad Max, Fury Road. Ladies and gentlemen, Charlize Theron! Next up, the screams of terror and disgust she'd make having sex with me might actually be an improvement on her music. Doing it with me would be more horrifying for her than that fateful night at the Dakota. Yoko Ono! As a gay man, he technically qualifies for the list. He stood in hurricanes, seeing the horrors of war up close. But nothing would break this breaker of breaking news like a good rogering from the Ace Man. I'm not sure if he's a top or a bottom, but I'm sure he'd rather be in the bottom of a lake than have sex with me, Anderson Cooper! Next, the media mogul, who would be so ruined for sex after getting with me, she'd have even less sex with Stedman. Getting nailed by me would not be living her best, fearless life in the now, and would definitely not be one of her favorite things, Oprah Winfrey! The liberals should pray I never bang my gavel in this judge, because I'd break her brittle elderly bones and give Trump another Supreme Court nomination. This member of SCOTUS wouldn't want to see my scrotus, Ruth Bader Ginsburg! And the list wouldn't be complete without this MVP, most vomiting person. This former View host would rather view an oncoming train than me coming, Joy Behar! Next, we both love racing and share some of the same political views. But after having sex with me, she'd have trouble finding a bathroom in North Carolina in which to vomit. Caitlyn Jenner! She'd hate having sex with me as much as she hates corporate greed and the uneven playing field. After humping me, her spirit would be Brocahontas Elizabeth Warren! She made the list all 3 years. We might even agree on politics, but she'd probably still be mad at me for hanging up on her when she called in late on my radio show in 2006. On the bright side, if I was inside her, for a change, she'd be filled with something other than hate. Ann Coulter! Also, a perennial on the list. She hates everything I stand for, and she could do a long editorial on MSNBC about how disgusted she was. Rachel Maddow! She'd end her lifestyle blog and probably just end her life. She wouldn't want any of my goop. Gwyneth Paltrow! She wasn't on the list in 2017 because we didn't know who the fuck she was. But even though she hates guns, she was number one with a bullet in 2018. Hispanic Democrat, young, attractive, she would be horrified. She'd go from AOC to RIP. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez! She a bitch or what? She's starting to get into a zone that I would call dangerous.
Absolutely.
Like, don't go back to work.
Don't work.
Don't do it.
Stop working.
Stop doing stuff.
Let the government take care of you.
What?
Who wants that?
I don't know. Well, there is a thing, Dawson. It's like, work bad, work bad, work bad. No, work healthy. Work good. Work sane.
Gives you a sense of purpose.
Yes.
At the end of the day, you can feel good about yourself because you fucking did something.
You can prove you were alive. And by the way, it's like, I got a bunch of guys over at that other shop. I got a bunch of guys over at the new shop. they're working for me, but they're doing something. I'm not standing over them smoking and cracking a whip and laughing while they stack stuff and I knock it over. They're fucking applying their trades. Nate's making movies. Those guys are laying tiles. Sean's working on a car. That's what they do.
So that would be fun if you get one of the lackeys and just stack it. Just tell him to stack a bunch of shit and then walk over, knock it over, and tell him to stack it again.
They're involved in, they're in a business where they get to perform something just like I do. That's what I do. It's fucking, not everyone who has a job just goes to a fucking factory and walks in a circle. It's like, this thing is like, why should they be doing this and that? Let's flip the script. How about thanking the person who employs the people that get to fucking do the shit?
And how about the people who spent their entire lives to get where they are in their career and actually work and enjoy it and love it?
It's a very anti-American approach to life is what I would call it.
I agree.
She has nothing that comes out of her mouth has anything to do with this country. It has stuff to do with other countries that fail and are failing, but not this country. It's weird that she wants to go there. Next up, she hates me because she thinks I said women aren't funny, even though I never did. But she makes me think what I didn't say is true. She starred in Girls, and she'd probably only have sex with girls after doing the deed with me, Lena Dunham! And last but not least, our 2019 winner. She'd weep openly with her daughter and then podcast about it, Melissa Milano! In closing, it seems like the Me Too fever has broken a little bit, but I'm sure there are more guys who are going to get taken out, some who deserve it and some who don't. The good news is, I used to be ashamed of masturbating alone. But in the post Harvey Weinstein, Louis C.K. world, I'm a hero. I have the class, dignity, and social justice bona fides to beat the bejesus out of my cock behind closed doors without any witnesses. In a word, I'm brave. Chapter 8. The de-evolution of a species. I've spent the previous 7 chapters breaking down how we've broken down as a society. I looked a lot at where we are now and how we got here. Now, let me put the atom into Nostradamus and look a little into the future to see where we're heading. It ain't pretty. But there's still a chance for us to do something about it. Wired for weakness. We're at a weird point in our evolutionary history. Up until the past few 100 years, which is a blink of the eye when it comes to evolution, we didn't toy with any notion of self-government. We were governed by nature. We planted in the spring and harvested in the fall. We killed a buffalo in the summer and made sure it lasted through the winter, or we would die. We didn't need self-control. Nature did that for us. But we have an internal mechanism that says, I don't want to chase a wildebeest around for 3 days and hope I kill it. It's called the law of conservation of energy. It's why cats sleep all day and bears hibernate. It's our biology to expend as little energy as possible. The nature of humans is to want to crawl back up our mom's pussy and take a nap. It used to be if we didn't expend enough energy to hunt, chop wood for the winter, and carry water from the well, we'd die. We're in a very dangerous place now where we're getting our wishes. That same law of conservation of energy gave us butchers and supermarkets. After that, we no longer needed to hunt and prepare the meat. Someone did it for us. Technology has now made it possible for us to no longer need to pick it up or cook it either. In the past, the entire world was tilted against our getting fat. We spent more calories getting food than we got from it. It's the exact opposite now. Now there's Panda Express at 9 a.m. for $4. Last New Year's, I made the declaration to my wife and kids that we would only be eating leftovers from the Christmas and New Year's parties to be less wasteful. We had a fridge full of good stuff, brisket and Chinese food. After making my family resolution for them, I took a nap. 45 minutes later, I woke up to find Subway and McDonald's on my kitchen counter. I'll save the rant on the passive-aggressive part of that and focus on the convenience. At first, I was confused by this Grubhub, DoorDash, and Postmates shit. One day, I was leaving the house at 9 in the morning and saw a heavy-set 19-year-old gal walking toward me up my driveway. I didn't know what to make of it. She was too old to be selling Girl Scout cookies, too young to be hawking Avon or Mary Kay, and not dressed well enough to be a Jehovah's Witness. Then I noticed what she was carrying. I thought, who the hell is this person, and why is she carrying a Carl's Jr. bag? Did she have the wrong address?